I'm Tracy Sable tonight on EWTN News Nightly, feeling the heat. Thousands are evacuating the Los Angeles area as horrific wildfires burn out of control. We have reaction from the White House. It's about time. A new amendment is introduced on Capitol Hill, which includes term limits for lawmakers. We'll tell you all about it. Potential change. Leaders of the Church of England propose classifying priests as employees. We break down what this would mean for the clergy. Plus, a gift from God. Pope Francis tells the faithful about the need for respect and care for children in today's world. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, deadly wildfires forced tens of thousands of people to evacuate their homes in California. At least three separate fires started burning near Los Angeles, and they quickly grew out of control. President Joe Biden approved a major disaster declaration and sent federal money and resources to help fight the fires. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Tracy, good evening to you. President Joe Biden was already in California when the wildfires erupted. He traveled there earlier this week for a separate event that had to be postponed, obviously. Meanwhile, he returns here to the White House later tonight.
The view from a passing plane shows widespread fires covering parts of California. Emergency crews quickly realized the flames were going to spread.
It is pushing directly towards Palisades. The thing's got a wide path of travel already.
Los Angeles declared a state of emergency as a windstorm fueled the fires.
This fire came up so fast.
Dave Waterfall says his family grabbed what they could and fled.
There's a lot of wind damage. I saw my house. We lost our gate and our fence. There's trees down that have crushed cars and on top of houses. And the fire is, the fire line's 8 blocks from our home.
Police and firefighters in Pasadena also worked with staff at a care home to evacuate residents. Ash and embers blew by as people in wheelchairs sought safety.
This is one of the worst situations that we have ever seen.
Smoke from the fires can be seen from space.
We got in the car to go, and then all the cars were abandoned, so I had nowhere to go, so I just had to get out of my car and start walking. The smoke is so bad.
President Joe Biden says he is being frequently briefed on the wildfires. Vice President Kamala Harris adds, as a proud daughter of California, I know the damage that wildfires have on our neighbors and communities. I also know that the impact is often felt long after the fire is contained.
And President-elect Donald Trump weighing in on the wildfires in California, posting on social media, quote, in many circles, they're doubting whether insurance companies will even have enough money to pay for this catastrophe, end quote. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
All right, thank you, Owen. And joining us now is Dr. Chad Hansen. He is a California wildfire scientist and a forest and fire ecologist with the John Muir Project. He's also the author of Smokescreen, Debunking Wildfire Myths to Save Our Forests and Our Climate. Chad, great to be with you today. And really, we're praying for all of you out there in California. Tell us what the situation is right now, and do we know yet how they started?
As far as I know, the cause is still unknown. If they do know, it hasn't been disclosed. But you know, the main situation right now is as it has been, you know, for the past day, which is very, very dry air, dry conditions. We haven't had much rain, and extreme winds in this very, very heavy Santa Ana wind event. And so it's a combination of circumstances that puts communities at significant risk, especially when these fires are so close to communities, and they've already directly impacted hundreds and hundreds of homes already. At least over 1,000 structures have been destroyed already at last count.
Yeah, it really is devastating. Chad, tell us about the winds in particular and how that's making this just that much more dangerous.
Well, the winds are the big factors in wildfires. You know, wildfires are fundamentally weather and climate events. We need to think of them like we think of hurricanes. And that's the problem, is in the past, in the 20th century in particular, we thought about fires as something that were in our control. We could stop them. We could stop them with fire suppression tactics. We could stop them by removing trees or shrubs from remote wildlands, and somehow that would stop a fire. But the reality is that they're driven by the wind. And if the temperature is right and you've got dry air and heavy wind and an ignition, the fire is going to spread, and oftentimes spread very quickly if you've got those heavy winds. And that's what we have here, and that's why we've seen such massive home losses.
Really hard to look at too, these images that we're seeing here on the screen. I know the wildfire season in California typically runs from about June to October, but we did see a wildfire in the Golden State in December, and now these destructive wildfires. Chad, how unusual is it to see these wildfires this time of year there, and of this magnitude?
Yeah, it's it's true. In wildfire season generally in California is June through September, but in Southern California it's an exception, mostly because of the Santa Ana wind events. Is this meteorological phenomenon unique to Southern California? It typically happens in the fall and also early winter, even as we're seeing now. And it's characterized by dry conditions and extreme wind, and that is what drives the flames more than anything else. And the reality is that when you've got these really dry conditions like this, dry air, dry ground, and you've got these heavy winds, you can't stop those fires. It's not possible for fire suppression forces to stop them. And it's not realistic of us as a society to expect them to, or it's not fair. What they can do is help people safely evacuate. And they've been doing that very, very successfully, and kudos to them for that, because they've been prioritizing that, and that was the right thing to do here.
Yeah, certainly. Another thing I want to touch on, too, is all the smoke from these wildfires. Can we talk about that and how that's impacting the air quality and also the potential health risks for people?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when people are this close to that kind of a concentration of smoke because the fire is so close, it can really be a significant risk to people, especially who are in sensitive categories, people with chronic respiratory problems, that they can really be impacted, seriously by that kind of smoke. So it's important for people to take whatever measures they can to protect themselves. But, of course, priority one is to get people out of harm's way. And that's, what first responders have been focusing on, because, again, you can't stop a fire that's being driven by 60, 70, 80 mile an hour winds.
Yeah. And what do you think, Chad, about the response from first responders to these fires?
I think they've been doing an outstanding job. They've been recognizing what they can do and recognizing what it's not possible. And so they've been focusing on community protection, public safety, number one, making sure people and whenever possible their animals, get out safely. And then when they've done that, then they do structure protection as a secondary issue to try to save the homes, doing last minute things, spraying water on homes, clearing dry grasses around homes, doing those basic things that can make a difference in a pinch. But their main focus is on basically making sure people get out safely, both firefighters and law enforcement working together to do this. And that's really where we need to move to. We've been moving more and more that way in terms of fire responses. And that's a good thing, because there's no higher priority than making sure people get out safely.
Absolutely. We're praying for everyone. Chad, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Our president-elect Donald Trump is asking the Supreme Court to step in and block his upcoming sentencing in his hush money case in Manhattan. Trump's legal team is seeking an immediate stay of the sentencing after New York courts refused to postpone it. His lawyers say his sentencing would wrongly restrict him as he prepares to take office. Trump was convicted last May on 34 felony counts of falsifying business records. The judge in the case has indicated that he will not impose jail time, fines, nor probation. Meanwhile, the DOJ says that it will release part of special counsel Jack Smith's report on Trump. Smith's findings in the election interference case will be made public, while the rest, focused on the president-elect's handling of classified documents, will be kept under wraps. This comes after a judge's decision to halt the release of the entire report. Well, the new Congress has just started, but an age-old issue is taking center stage: term limits for lawmakers. The issue is being backed by some GOP members and even President-elect Donald Trump, and it's gaining momentum. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales has that story.
Good evening, Tracy. 90% of Americans support term limits for lawmakers in Congress, but right now there are no limits and never have been. Now a push is being made by some GOP lawmakers. They tell me that age and illness play a part, but they also add that many lawmakers are out for themselves instead of serving the American people. South Carolina Congressman Ralph Norman is leading the effort in the House.
6 years in the House is fine. Two terms in the Senate is fine. The fact that the pushback is coming from those who just want to come up here and live on the government. That's just not right. That's not how the framers intended it.
While Florida Senator Rick Scott is leading the effort in the upper chamber.
But we ought to make sure that we're getting new people, new ideas. You would know if you're up here and you're up here and you're up here for 12 years, you know, sometime in your 12 years, you're going to get your stuff done and you have a limited time. So I believe in it. We have term limits for presidents, for most governors. So it works.
Supporters say these pictures tell the story. Lawmakers being wheeled around while others using walkers after falls, or those absent from Congress altogether, like now retired Congresswoman Kay Granger, who is spending her days in an assisted living facility. Nick Tombolidis is the CEO of U.S. Term Limits and is lobbying to change the Constitution.
Term limits is the way to just open up these elections, get open seats on a regular basis, and what you see is a huge influx of new candidates, new energy, new ideas. We have elections, but obviously the deck is stacked.
Those against limiting lawmakers' terms say the voters already decide.
We live every 2 years by term limits. If the people in the 33rd Congressional District in California choose for me not to be their representative, I will move on. I have limits. The voters decide that.
Lawmakers are optimistic that this may finally be the time to get term limits in place, but it will be a heavy lift. Even if two-thirds of Congress approves the constitutional amendment, three-fourths of the states must also pass it. Also want to let you know about some other news. Just a short time ago, U.S. Capitol Police arrested a man who tried to bring a machete along with several knives into the Capitol. Police say that he waited in line for a half an hour and then tried to bring a bag through the visitor center. It was spotted by police in the X-ray machine. On this day, when former President Jimmy Carter is lying in state, and just hours prior to President-elect Donald Trump arriving to meet with Senate Republicans. Tracy?
Well, another day and another country for U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken. Today, he met with the French foreign minister and talked about a number of issues, including the war between Israel and Hamas.
We're very close to a ceasefire and hostage agreement. We've talked about this, too, in recent days. I hope that we can get it over the line in the time that we have left.
Secretary Blinken also talked about President-elect Trump's desire to buy Greenland. He calls it a bad idea. Blinken will now travel to Rome to join President Biden on his trip to the Vatican. All right, now to the Middle East, where Israeli forces have recovered the body of another hostage held by Hamas in Gaza. The military says the body of 53-year-old Yosef al-Zaydani was found in an underground tunnel during an operation in Rafah. Meanwhile, Palestinian medics say an Israeli airstrike killed at least five people in the Gaza Strip, including two infants. This all comes as Israel and Hamas attempt to find common ground on a deal to release the remaining roughly 100 hostages. Now to Tibet, where authorities are spending a second day searching for possible survivors of the deadly earthquake. Despite the rescue efforts, the death toll now stands at more than 125 people, with nearly 200 others injured. Relief items have been delivered to those whose homes are now rubble or unsafe and are currently facing temperatures below freezing. Exiled Tibetans in Nepal have gathered to express solidarity and to pray for the victims. Hundreds of supporters and opponents are holding rallies in South Korea after the impeachment of the president for recently imposing martial law. One side is calling for Yoon Suk-yeol to be removed from power and arrested. The other side says they will protect him. Yoon is refusing to appear for questioning over his short-lived declaration of martial law. Opposition officials say that they are ready to arrest members of the presidential security staff. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including First of the Year, who the Holy Father dedicated his first general audience of 2025 to. And a new tax is targeted targeting Catholic schools, where it's happening, and what it's costing parents. Labour government in the United Kingdom imposed a tax last week targeting Catholic and other private schools, and now a 20% value-added tax is being added to tuition. The government says the decision was made to, quote, improve standards and opportunities for 9 out of 10 children who attend state schools. The Catholic Herald reports that many Catholic school parents are unhappy with the 20% rise in tuition, especially as the tax began in the middle of the school year. One Catholic school has already said the value-added tax was the final straw in its decision to close at the end of the term. While staying in the UK, a new report says that priests in the Anglican Church of England could soon be classified as employees, a move that would upend centuries of tradition. The idea came from the Archbishop of York. Bishop Stephen Cottrell says the change to all employee-employer relationships would make it easier to discipline priests and could lead to increased accountability, especially regarding claims of sexual abuse. The Times of London reports the proposal left some clergy, quote, horrified. For more, we turn now to Father Dwight Longenecker, a former Anglican priest from England. He is now a Catholic priest and a pastor at Our Lady of the Rosary Church in Greenville, South Carolina. Father Dwight, great to have you back on. So tell us a little bit more about this proposal from a clergy perspective.
Yeah, in the Anglican Church, I don't know the exact dates, but centuries ago, the priest in charge of a parish, who would be called a vicar or a rector, would be given something which is called the parson's freehold. And the parson's freehold basically meant that he legally owned the vicarage house that he lived in and the church property. Now, of course, he couldn't sell those properties. And over the centuries, the administration of the church has become much more centralized. So the vicar or the rector not only owned the property, but he used to receive personally the 10% tithe from the parish, which was meant to be his source of his income. That, of course, also was centralized, and all the money now goes to central authorities, the Church of England Pensions Board, the Church of England Board of Finance, which then distributes the money out to the vicar. However, that historic parson's freehold gave the priest in his parish a certain amount of tenure. So if he was actually appointed vicar or rector of the parish, not just priest in charge, which was a monarch was given to avoid this parson's freehold, if he had the title of vicar or rector, he could stay in his parish house and stay in his parish for life. Nobody was legally. So I can understand why the hierarchy are interested in getting rid of the parson's freehold and making the priests employees of the central diocese or the central board of finance. Because then if you're an employee, it's going to be easier to remove you if there's problems with you.
Yeah. What's been the reaction to this proposal so far? Do you know?
Well, someone asked me, is that a good thing or a bad thing? I said, it's a good thing for the bishop because he can move people on if he needs to or discipline people if he needs to. And not surprisingly, the Archbishop of York is the one of the ones who's pushing this. But it's a bad thing for the priest because the priest has not only got his tenure for life, but it gives him a certain amount of independence and therefore a platform to stand on should he actually have to stand up, for instance, for some moral situation. For instance, in England at the moment, there's a huge scandal about some gangs that were raping young girls. And nobody seems to be taking a stand. But if a priest wanted to stand up and say, this is wrong, our politicians should not suppress the inquiry into this, we need to push forward with a full inquiry and prosecute the guilty people, and this is a moral issue for the Christian church, he could do that because he can't be fired for doing that. However, if he's an employee and he takes a stance which is sent anti-universal or a bit prophetic from a Christian and a theological point of view, he can get the sack.
Yeah. Do you think, almost out of time here, but do you think this is something that could happen in the Catholic Church over there?
You know, I'm not as familiar with the workings of the Catholic Church in England. I was a Catholic in England for 10 years before moving up as a layman. And I never really went down into the engine room, if you like, to find out how things work. But I would have thought the same principles apply, and that is, if it's easy to get rid of a priest or discipline a priest, a bishop is happy because he has more power. If it's not easy to get rid of a priest or discipline a priest, then the priest is in position, but the bishop is not. And this can be a situation all across the church, actually, not just in the church in the UK, where we want to believe that our shepherds and our bishops are all good, worthy men who have only the welfare of their priests and their people and their flock in mind. But we all know that our bishops and our clergy are subject to human frailty like anybody else, and power struggles arise and personality conflicts arise. And in the Catholic Church, a priest who's appointed as a pastor of a parish in some diocese has got a similar kind of tenure and therefore a similar kind of independence of mind and independence of spirit, where he can actually stand up and take make a stance if he needs to.
Well, Father Dwight, thank you so much for coming on and sharing all this with us. And we really appreciate it. Good to see you. God bless.
Thank you very much. God bless you.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, feeling their pain, who Pope Francis dedicated his first general audience of the year to, and the message he has for all of the faithful. Plus, an answered prayer for a Catholic school in Massachusetts once on the verge of bankruptcy. The remarkable story coming up next. Dedicates his first general audience of the new year to the plight of children.
Come succede anche oggi a tante persone, tante bambini.
At his weekly talk, the Holy Father denounced the, quote, scourge of child labor and other abuses suffered by children. Pope Francis says that the faithful cannot remain indifferent to these problems. He also says that children are a gift from God that must not be exploited or harmed, but protected and loved. The former head of schools for the Archdiocese of Boston is urging Catholic schools to double down on their faith, especially in the face of rising secularism. Writing for the National Catholic Register, Tom Carroll says in part, quote, our culture is under attack. Our values have eroded and our faith is mocked. We have a clear choice. We can stand by and do nothing, or we can restore our Catholic schools to be a force for good amid a broader cultural decline. Instead of watering down our schools to appease non-believing parents, our Catholic schools must plant the seeds for a brighter, more faithful future for the Church and for America. O'Carroll is now the founder and president of the Catholic Talent Project, which aims to prevent the large number of young people who walk away from the Catholic faith during their school years. Well, finally tonight, a Catholic school outside of Worcester, Massachusetts that nearly closed 5 years ago now has a major reason to celebrate. In 2019, St. Bernard High School in Fitchburg was informed that the Diocese of Worcester could no longer afford to keep it open. So the school community sprung into action. They raised money to help keep the school running. And not only was the school able to stay open, but enrollment increased, even more incredible. Over the past few days, St. Bernard received an anonymous donation of up to $6 million. And the school is calling it a miracle. Indeed it is. And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable, and we leave you tonight with more from the Holy Father's Wednesday audience, including a performance by a super circus group from Africa. Good night, and God bless.